Canada does sit on what's called the JMEC, the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission. We, along with the Netherlands, we represent a large grouping of countries called the IGAD Partners Forum. So we're participating in that. And then, meanwhile, we have maintained our, our focus on the country. In the last 2 years, we've doubled our humanitarian assistance. This year will be $45 million, and we've actually maintained our development programming in two critical areas in South Sudan at this time. One is food security, helping farmers grow more food and get the food to market, and the second area is maternal and neonatal child health. That means training midwives, helping young mothers, babies, and so on. Mm-hmm. And we're really excited because very soon there's going to be a survey, and we're hoping that we will see the child mortality rates in South Sudan have gone down dramatically. We hope.
Yes. Let's first talk about the peace agreement. You did mention right now that this is the beginning, the actual beginning of the implementation of the peace agreement with the coming of Machar and hopefully the formation of the transitional government of national unity. Now, most often in other countries, we've seen examples where transitional governments of national unity so far don't work sometimes. Now, in this particular case of South Sudan, what do you think should the leaders do in order for this government to work?
Well, I think first we have to recognize this tragic war of the last 28 months has been a war that nobody has won. So what we have is a power-sharing agreement. And power-sharing agreements are never entirely satisfactory because there's always both sides feel that they should have got a better deal. So it's a power-sharing agreement. It's going to be very difficult, but frankly, there is no other choice. People are right when they say it's not a very satisfactory agreement. It was imposed and so on. But we have to ask, well, what was the choice? The alternative was the country would go into a deeper war, and it would become more of an ethnic war. So I think, to be honest, it's a no-brainer. We have to support this peace process. But looking ahead for the next few months, I think the number one, what I sense the people of South Sudan want above all is an end to insecurity, particularly in the Equatorias and Bahr el-Ghazal now. As you know, the conflict has spread in a very uneven way to those regions, and unrestricted access for humanitarian organizations. And hopefully, if we can achieve that greater security, and we should be able to, with the leaders of both the president and the vice president in the same room, and the two chiefs of general staff working together, we should be able to end that, get that humanitarian access. I think number two, and this is probably directly relevant to the people of Juba, is the economic situation. Now, this, I don't need to tell you how difficult this has become. People are feeling this every day, and we're starting to see hunger in the streets of Juba. To be frank, there won't be a quick fix. This is going to take some very courageous decisions by the government. I believe the international community is ready to support, but they're going to want to see some major economies and some very courageous political decisions by the government first. And then I think probably most important, but they may be tempting to put this off, is reconciliation, healing, and justice. I'd really like to stress there has to be justice. Kofi Annan, the former Secretary General of the UN, said a couple of weeks ago up in Addis, if you put peace before justice, you won't get either. And I think that's right. It can't be put off. I do believe, again, from talking to people in rural parts, they need to see an accounting for what has happened. Only by getting that kind of accounting can we avoid the country falling into the same trap again. We have to end the impunity. It's been 50 years of impunity in many ways. So there has to be an accounting for what happened in Juba, for what happened in Bor, Malakal, and Bentiu. And some people will need to pay the price.
All right. Let's first look at the economy here. Of course, there's been a lot of expectation from the citizens as well, thinking if the peace is being implemented, at least things will come down. At least prices of commodities will a little come down and all that. You mentioned it's not going to be easy to fix the economy. You clearly put that. Now, what should really, really be done? If you have to make some suggestions, what should the transitional government of national unity do in order to, you know, at least minimize the economic situation?
Well, obviously there are a number of factors that are completely out of the government's control, and one, as you know, is the price of oil and the revenues that Juba derives from that oil. In that regard, I think, to be honest, it will be very important to how can I say, to reconstruct the relationship with Khartoum, with the government of Sudan, to achieve some result on those negotiations so that South Sudan gets a greater percentage of the profit from its oil sales. So that will be very important. But then we need a whole range of measures, fiscal discipline. We're going to need austerity. We're going to need government ministers and officials are going to be will not be able to travel business class all over the world in large numbers. We're going to need all of those V8s that you see on the streets of Juba. Mm-hmm. The country can't afford to be buying those. And those decisions are going to hurt, and they will be politically difficult. I think in the security sector, the elephant in the room is the size of the security sector and the wage bill for the police and the SPLA. That's going to be very difficult because the SPLA in particular needs to be drastically reduced in size. The country can't afford to be paying 250,000 men. But I should say they are paying 250,000, but I think very few people believe there are 250,000. Okay. They think there are really only, 100, 120,000. But it's those ghost workers, those ghost soldiers have to be eliminated. And that may be difficult. Taking on the generals in that respect. But it has to be done because 60 or 70% of the government's revenue is spent on the security sector right now.
Now, talking about the international community, of course, a lot of the international community has put up their donations to South Sudan or cut off some of their projects in South Sudan. Now, with this peace being implemented, the formation of transitional government of national unity, do you think the international community is going to play a very bigger role in even trying to, help in the economy?
I think we're all sitting on the edge of our chairs at the moment. We're waiting to see what the new cabinet is like. I think it's not so much the ministers, but we want to see a very competent, technically qualified team in the Ministry of Finance and in the Bank of South Sudan, above all. People who are there because they are technical experts, to really get a control of what's happening, a sense of what's happening, so that the IMF can come in and engage and give the appropriate advice. And then in turn, we will listen to the IMF to see what they think we, the international community, should do and under what conditions. I have to say, I think there will be some conditions.
Not all about the formation of the transitional government of national unity and then the international community comes in.
It's not as easy as, it's not our role to pick, to say who should be minister, of course, but obviously we will be looking at that with a lot of interest. But no, you're perfectly right. To be frank, the checks won't be written tomorrow just because the transitional government has been formed. The government will need to perform. I was here 3 years ago when all of this began in June and July 2013. And the skeptics, the cynics will say, we're just recreating the same government. Mm-hmm. We're going to need to know it's not just the same government, or at least that it's not the same practices. We had a very inspiring speech yesterday. I was at the Dutch National Day, and Minister Bashir, the outgoing foreign minister, he said it will not be business as usual. And that's mm-hmm. what we're very much hoping for, starting today or tomorrow.
Let's talk about the humanitarian situation in the country. Of course, there's been a lot of devastating, humanitarian situation, displacement of people going out of their houses. We have the IDPs in many, many places. Now, as your government, even without the formation of the government of national unity and with all this that is you just put on some of the conditions or things that needed to be done, in terms of humanitarian help, what is your government doing?
We spent, over the last 2 years since the onset of the crisis, we've doubled our humanitarian assistance to the tune of about $45 million. Some of that goes to various UN agencies, such as World Food Programme, UNICEF, and so on. Some goes to the International Committee of the Red Cross. And then we also work through some of the non-governmental organizations who in turn work with national ones. But I have to say, the humanitarian is an extremely expensive, cumbersome way of delivering assistance. We really wish we didn't have to do it. Development is much cheaper, much more effective, and much better for South Sudan. But number one is to get into the situation where we're not just having to feed people so they can survive to the next day. We want to be able to teach them to feed themselves. And that's why we're desperate to get back into development. But we really have to have the full access for the humanitarians. And that's been difficult. Not just because of the fighting, there's been many obstacles. A convoy traveling from from Nimele or from down from Ye up to Bentiu goes through 50 or 60 checkpoints, nearly all illegal, and many of them money is extorted. That has to cease. That's our taxpayers' money, frankly. That has to cease. And I think the space has to be given for the organizations to do what they're best at. I think the people in government, the SPLA, they remember that in the war, the people of South Sudan, well, I'm talking about the war with the Khartoum, mm-hmm. The international community basically fed the people of South Sudan for 15 years. And the people who are now in government learned to appreciate the NGOs at that time. It's been disappointing in the last 2 years. We have not seen that. It's been the opposite. The NGOs have been largely obstructed, I have to say.
Now, Ambassador, a lot of people have been a little skeptical about, as you put, that Bashir Bandi said it's not going to be business as usual. But these are the same people that has been there since 2015. Do you, in your own view, do you think it's going to be really different this time?
Well, you know, as a diplomat, we have to give people the benefit of the doubt here. We have to wait and see. And that's when I talked about the assistance being conditional. That's why the check won't be written tomorrow. The checks may be, we may start to write the checks when we start to see the performance. Those decisions have to be made first. But people do change. First of all, we don't know if it's going to be exactly the same people. Mm-hmm. We do change. We do know that the people who are coming in have experienced what has happened to this country in the last 2.5 years. And I believe many of them are as profoundly shocked and disappointed and frustrated as we are. So we are hoping and praying that that they now have a greater vision for this country than they did 2.5 years ago.
Now, in terms of accountability, and of course, one of the things in the country is the corruption that has been there before. Are you concerned? I mean, is the international community concerned about transitional government of national unity, and maybe they won't be accountable to the citizens?
Well, I think corruption has always been certainly in the last few years, definitely a major concern. As I say, in some ways, that's our money, that's our taxpayers' money, that's our government money. So there's a lot of concern from our politicians back in Canada when they hear the stories of corruption. So we will be extremely vigilant, and as and when we come in to assist financially, we will need much stronger controls over the financial flows. We will need to be able to see where our money is going as it moves from the oil revenues into the system to salaries, down to the states.